This episode of Where Did the Road Go is brought to you in part by our Patreons. If you want to become a patron, go to wheredidtheroadgo.com. And now our show.
Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
Welcome to this edition of Where Did the Road Go? And we're gonna find out where the road goes tonight. We have with us Red Pill Junkie.
Hello, good evening.
Cheryl Lee.
Good evening.
And Adam Sane.
Hello. Nice to be back. I feel like I'm here every 2 weeks now.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
Awesome.
And last week I was on your show.
Yes, you were.
So, we're going to split this up. We're going to do a couple of news things. And even though I dealt with this with Walter Bosley, we should talk about the whole Corey Good trying to trademark. What is it? Space Force?
Yes.
Secret Space Program.
That's what it is. All right.
Right.
Blue Chicken Kung Pao recipe.
Is he trying to trademark Blue Avian as well? Is he trying to do that too?
I don't know, because Walter said that the Blue Avian thing's been kind of pushed to the side now.
Oh. That must not have gained as much traction.
Either that or because of the whole falling out with Wilcock.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and if you're taking something to court, maybe it doesn't go over well. When you talk about, you know, big birds telling you what to do. I mean, maybe that would, you know, speak to your credibility.
Yeah, there's that. I don't know. Anytime someone wants to copyright, like, phrases and things. Look at all the stuff Gene Simmons has done, where he just keeps copywriting stuff that has nothing to do with him. And they let him do it because no one's ever done it before, you know?
Remember, who is the guy who currently owns the UFO magazine?
Well, that I don't know.
Bill Burns.
Oh, okay.
He tried to copyright the word or the acronym UFO.
Really?
So for magazines, you know, so his will be the only magazine that will have the right in the United States to use the word UFO.
Huh.
And obviously he failed.
Yeah, the key word there is tried.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it goes to show what kind of person he is.
So what is the details on this, Soraya? Because you talked to Bosley about this. I've just seen that he wants to copyright this phrase, but do you know any more of the details on it?
I don't. And Walter was looking into some more stuff right as we started talking, so I'm sure he has more now than he did when we talked.
Yeah, I mean, this is a concept that's been around for what, at least 20 years, maybe even longer than that.
Yeah, and he didn't come up with it.
Yeah.
No, and I mean, like, I could see if Richard Dolan wanted
it. Right.
Yeah, Richard should have trademarked the term breakaway civilization. He would have made a whole ton of money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And actually,
do that kind of thing though until some butthead wants to do it.
Yeah, but I think if you go far enough in books, probably somebody's used it before you. I mean, and. Like, I know that I've listened to a few of the other, you know, commentaries on this and different other podcasts, and nobody's had any difficulty going back past when Corey Good actually went public and finding the term, you know, prior to then. So
according to the United States Patent and Trademark Office, he has tried to patent 4 words. Actually, the full-out secret space program is not one of them. It's just SSP. Also, SBA, Return of the Guardians, Blue Avians,
Sphere, okay, there you go.
Sphere Being Alliance, and 20 and Back.
Jesus what? Christ.
20 and back.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Oh, does that mean you spend 20 years on Mars and you go back as a baby?
Maybe.
Is that what it, yeah. Some Al Bielik action there?
That would be my guess, yeah. And that page is not loading. Okay, cool.
I don't know. It's just, it's such a silly story. But on the other hand, it could cause legitimate researchers some grief.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
To me, what it means is, aside from the fact that he's a moron and a greedy bastard, it also implies to me that he's run into with some financial difficulties. That maybe, you know, that his shtick or his delusions, the stories that he's trying to peddle, are not as profitable as he would like them to be.
Well, that could be.
Sadly, he's a moron with a lawyer, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
which makes
him try to sue me for saying he's a moron, you know.
No, but I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that he's causing grief for people. Apparently, he's threatened a few podcasters, and
Jesus.
I mean, they've all laughed at him, but
oh, sure.
But but essentially, he's causing grief where there doesn't need to be grief.
Yeah.
Not everyone understands the difference between like slander and expressing your own opinion.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So Red Pill can say he's a moron. He's just expressing his opinion. He's not saying that Corey did something that he didn't do or trying to slander, you know, saying, oh, Corey Good's into this horrible thing and just making stuff up, which would be slander.
So.
Or if you want to be safe, say he acted like a moron.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, from my position, he seems like a moron.
Yes. But, you know, you could also plead that, you know, English isn't your first language, and you really meant to say like a
moron. Okay, that he seems like a pendejo.
Well, I think ultimately, Cheryl Lee and Red Pill would be okay, because they're not in the same country. So I think that probably...
Oh, yeah.
Good you'd point. Probably be okay to begin with. But me and Soraya, we have to be careful.
I have never listened to anything Corey Good related, honestly.
No, I only heard about him through other podcasters who complain about him.
Me neither. I mean, it's something that is so out of my even interest zone. Not even as morbidity to try to see, you know, how bad or campy his stories are. It's just like, if I want to see, I don't know, cheesy science fiction, I better stick with Spaceballs.
I just felt very badly for Richard Dolan having to sit on a panel with him.
And that's the thing. He gets thrown in with serious researchers, and that's, you know.
But that's the fault of the organizers. The
people that's what I was about to say.
Mm-hmm, who come up with these conferences and say, okay, you know, who is the guy who got the big ratings? Oh, Corey Good. Does it matter if he's full of BS or not? No. I mean, what we want is to sell tickets. So we'll pairing up with serial researchers like Richard Dolan. And I actually have a lot of appreciation and respect for Richard, despite the fact that I sometimes often don't agree with his conclusions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And me neither, but I respect the man, definitely. Someone going to say something?
I was going to say it's perfectly okay to not disagree or not agree with everything.
Oh, yeah.
Your friends or people you respect have to say. That's
it's healthy.
Yeah, it is healthy. You don't want to live in an echo chamber.
Yeah, or be a sycophant to someone.
Yeah. So it's just like I said. The only times I ever hear about him are when other people are complaining or saying he's threatening them with a lawyer or that he's making Mufon look silly. Yeah.
So he is actually threatening people to take them to court.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah, he does have a lawyer, apparently.
Well, that's not hard. Anyone can get a lawyer.
Well, this is true. This is true.
This reminds me of the people who attempted to claimed that they had patented the concept of a podcast.
Really?
So, yeah, didn't you hear about this? So this guy was making the rounds. Every single podcast that was kind of like successful, they threatened them for copyright infringement. You know, somehow he had managed to pull that up to say, yeah, I came up with that idea. Even though it was absolutely nothing to substantiate that, but that was enough for, you know, podcasters to fear the legal repercussions. So yeah, there's a lot of people gave in and forked and decided to give this guy some money. So other people stood up and say no, and they actually fought a legal battle with that guy and won. So yeah, yeah. I remember that. That happened, you know. It's kind of amazed me that in the United States something like that can happen. That you have an excess of lawyers
now. Well, yes.
Nothing to do, nothing better to do.
But that's like saying, well, I've copyrighted the term TV show, so you can't make a TV show unless, you know, you pay me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or copyright the books.
Yeah.
You know, or... Sorry, this is my technology now. I don't know. You know, if you're going to write a book, you have to pay the book guy. Yeah.
Just lazy people that just want to make money off of something. Doesn't matter what it is. Honestly. Well,
it's much easier to do it that way than to do real research.
Yeah. Or to do real work. Yeah.
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 I mean, that's the thing. There's lots of people out there just looking for an easy payday.
Yeah. Yeah, and in this field, there are people who have no credibility whatsoever, but people prefer not to mess with them because of fear of legal repercussions. There is a certain American individual who is kind of like the defender or the promoter of a certain Swiss contactee. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I know that the American defender of this Swiss contactee has made a lot of legal threats to people who question the authenticity of photographs to even a child. You know,
what do you say? You say those aren't real, Red Pill? Hubcaps are real. If you throw a hubcap in the
air, let me rephrase. I feel that they seem unreal.
Well, that's an interesting distinction. The when I was on Adam's show, what's Chris's last name?
Chris Wolford.
Right. We were discussing the Tic Tac video, and he's going on how it's a real video, and I've never questioned that it's a real video. It's very obviously a real video. I just question what we're looking at.
Exactly, a real video of what?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, yeah, people also fake videos. There's plenty of those out there. I always love the ones of like the grays crawling out from underneath the car and stuff like that.
Oh.
Like they're done badly, but well for being done badly, you know?
Actually reminds me that the Tom DeLonge on his Instagram account posted one of those photographs taken by that Swiss contactee and saying, well, I only know that this was appeared before Photoshop, so.
And wow.
Even his supporters was like, dude, I mean, don't say that.
Well, it's accurate. It was taken before Photoshop.
Yeah, exactly.
When you can just throw a hubcap in the air, yeah, that's real because you're getting a hubcap in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a good clear picture of it in the air.
Yeah. I think that George Adamski, I think that this guy, Ray Stanford, George Adamski, the famous contactee, showed him the way how he faked his famous photographs of those Venusian exploration ships. And Ray Stanford was actually distraught, not for the fact that the guy faked the photos, but the fact that he used radioactive painting without any kind of security whatsoever in order to coat these miniature models and to film them. You know, like, George, you can't do that. You know, it's totally unsafe.
But it was the aliens. Right, let's look at this article that Cherilee shared with us before we started. And I'm going to let Cherilee talk a little bit about this because this is way more in your wheelhouse and it's really fascinating.
Okay, which article? Because I sent you a bunch.
Well, the last one you sent was the Impossible Material Ushers in Graphene Age.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what was really fun about that was that one of the main people who were responsible for this new technology was a University of Manchester professor who actually he's unique in the fact that not only does he have a Nobel Prize, but prior to winning the Nobel Prize, he won the Ig Nobel Prize. It's kind of a joke prize. Basically, his peers made fun of him because he was
so thrust snarky.
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, scientists can be jerks sometimes too.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, you know, he levitated a live frog in an electromagnetic field and sent a paper about it to the European Journal of Physics.
All right, yeah.
And using the title of Flying Frogs and Levitrons. And so he got this joke award because they thought it was silly research. And I mean, might have been silly, but it was pretty amazing what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I mean, his colleagues told him, don't even accept this award. Like, you know, just ignore them. And he was like, no, I'm going to, you know, this is funny. I'm going to be the guy with the sense of humor and just go along with this. And, sucks. You know, and then a number of years after that, he won the Nobel Prize for his work with graphene. Which is like now heralding in this kind of revolution in terms of how it's going to be applicable to electronics. So, you know,
what is it exactly?
It's a very, very thin level layer. Sorry, it's like a single cellular level of graphite.
Hmm.
So it's just getting it that thin. Was really the trick, and he was the one who figured out how to do it, but you know, and making it stable. But you know, even when he tried to get that work published, it was originally turned down by the journals because they said, "Oh, this is impossible," but he was doing it.
Huh. Yeah. Why look at the facts when you can just deny it because it falls outside your belief system?
Excellent.
So yeah, here's this guy who's doing these things, and he's a very out of the box thinker, and has obviously a good sense of humor, and mm-hmm. he's the only person to both win the serious Nobel Prize and the joke Nobel Prize.
Wow,
I'm reading here that in 1993, Dr. John Mack also won the Ig Nobel Award. Oh, yeah. He shared it with David Jacobs.
No, really?
Mm-hmm.
What's, Cherilee, how is this changing things now with this, what is it called, graphene? How's it changing? How's it revolutionizing things now? Does it say?
Yeah, it does. Don't you guys read my articles that I send out?
No.
No.
I usually do. I did not get a chance to read this one tonight, though.
I know that one of the applications for graphene is this thing called Banta Black, which is the blackest substance known to man. Like, you can coat something with it, and it's almost like seeing a 2D version of the thing. You know, it has absolutely no kind of like reflections or some kind of like features. And I think that they used it in the last Winter Olympic Games in Korea to coat paint a building and some kind of an installation. And yeah, it looks really creepy because it almost looked like someone put up a black hole instead of a building.
Wow.
Hmm. Oh, well, I mean, some of the things that they're showing here is that Iowa State engineers have made plant tattoo sensors, which are wearable graphene-based sensors on tape for plants to make it easier to measure water use in crops.
Huh.
And actually, the graphene is, they're looking into it, has a replacement for silicon and has semiconductors in electronics.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it has a variety of applications.
Well, good thing it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Well, and it was Nature that turned it down, the journal Nature.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, it said, well, this just wasn't a possible, you know. Is it here? Okay, I found it here. Nature magazine in 2004 rejected the article that the discoverers of graphene first sent out. And one peer reviewer's reason for rejection was that making it two-dimensional, the thickness of only one atom in stable form was impossible.
Hmm.
And another of Nature's reviewers said it was not a sufficient scientific advance.
Oh, okay. I can see that.
It reminds me of the thing that happened with the guy who discovered prions. You know, these things that caused mad mm-hmm. cow disease and other nasty things to human and animals' brains. And
right.
Most scientists totally rejected that idea. The idea that there could be something like a prion, which is, you know, I think is even smaller than a virus.
That
was totally impossible. So they actually almost destroyed this guy's career until he was finally vindicated.
Hmm. Yeah, and then we had mad cow disease.
Mm-hmm.
Caused by the, what is it, malformed prions, I think?
Yeah.
Caused by cannibalism initially is the reason why it happens. That's how the prions... Is that how they form, I guess?
Because it was cows eating cows, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were eating feed that had other cows in it. Which the same thing would happen to us, which the same thing does happen to...
Cannibals in Papua New Guinea or something like that, yeah.
Right.
I think it's called
the same thing would happen if you eat your own species meat, the same thing happens.
Hmm. But not right away.
No,
it takes time.
Right. Mm. You know, like you get sick all the time, but if the cows are being fed constantly, that which they were, then it gets into the system. And I think red pill is it spread other ways too, besides that it can actually then spread from cow to cow without there being some cannibalism?
I'm not really sure about that. All I know is that there's been people speculating that one of the reasons behind cattle mutilations is because there was some kind of program to try to keep tabs of the spread or the danger of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, mad cow disease, spreading into the population. So some people have alluded that, yeah, that's one of the reasons behind these cattle mutilations that started in the United States in the 70s and in the 80s.
And I think, I'm forgetting his name.
Chris O'Brien?
Chris O'Brien had speculated that in his book. Mm-hmm. And when I talked to him, he said, you know, it makes, you know, because I was like, well, why wouldn't they just check the cows without, and he pointed out that a lot of these people who have the cattle out in the Midwest and stuff wouldn't be so keen on the government taking any of their cows, even if they were paying them for them. Mm-hmm. And they would want to keep this quiet about what they were using the cattle for, as for what they're checking. However, it doesn't explain all the cattle mutilation cases.
Of course, no.
Because there are some that are just so full of like high strangeness that
mm-hmm.
you know, the government doesn't explain it.
Yeah, if you went around to check the cows for the mad cow disease, it'd be something you would have to do. You would have to pick groups out at random, so you couldn't really have it organized. Otherwise, you would just get the data would just remain the same, probably.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
And when you look at the Skinwalker Ranch type of cattle, mutilations, like that's unless you have time traveling governments.
yeah.
I don't know how that works.
So Shirley, what were your thoughts on the Skinwalker documentary? Did you watch it?
I did watch it because I was going to talk to you about it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was. Let's clear that up for people. I told people you probably fell asleep. What really happened?
What really happened? We were hit by a tornado.
So kind of the same thing.
Kind of the same thing. Actually, our power went off about an hour before the tornado hit our neighborhood, and we had no idea what had happened. And altogether, there were 6 tornadoes around.
Wow.
Yeah, in the area, 2 of which hit the city directly. And
that's you've never had anything like that before.
Ottawa gets tornadoes. It's not unusual.
But like that.
But it was just kind of one of those perfect storms where they say the condition. I mean, there was a tornado warning that day, and we get warnings all the time. And they say it really takes, very specific conditions for a storm to turn into a tornado. And that day, it was perfect. Yeah, it just did.
And 6 times.
Yeah. And I mean, thankfully, sadly, one person lost his life, but it's just amazing that there weren't more serious injuries than there were.
Yeah.
And we were without power for 4 days. We didn't have internet or phone service. So, no, I couldn't get a hold of you and let you know why I wasn't going to be there. And then I had just sent you the message, before the power went off.
And I think when you did, you were like, okay, I didn't fall asleep.
Yeah. It's like, no, I didn't fall asleep. If I don't make it to a show when I say I'm going to, send help. Don't accuse me of napping.
Well, I figured, you probably just dozed off. You're usually reliable.
I am so reliable.
Exactly. So, I figured that was the most likely scenario.
It was more likely than having a tornado.
6 tornadoes.
Yeah, it was more likely than that, but that's not how it happened. It was like living in the upside down for 4 days.
Wow.
That first night, we still, the only news we could get was through a transistor radio I found in a toy box in the basement.
Wow.
Yeah, it was my old transistor radio and I found a battery for it. And that's when we started hearing about, the tornadoes, and they were telling people not to go anywhere because, of course, all the streetlights were not working because the tornadoes went right down the power grid, took out a transformer station and another power station. It did a lot of damage to the power. Thankfully, it didn't do a lot of damage to people. But, houses were removed off their foundations. It was a serious storm. And that first night there was just sirens all night. And there was all this dust and haze in the air from the nearby forest that was basically reduced to just sawdust. And so, you looked out and there was this weird haze and it was so dark, because there's no power anywhere. When you live in a city, you're used to that kind of, that certain haze of light that surrounds a city, and that was gone. And so it was just really dark and really hazy. And there were drones flying over because they were using them to try and assess the damage and look for people who needed to be rescued. There were sirens from fire trucks. They had to turn the gas off in some houses in our neighborhood. They were rescuing people who were trapped in elevators. it was just, there were chainsaws going because they were trying to get trees off of cars and get people out of them.
It was just
crazy. And I mean, still when you walk through the neighborhood and, you know, there's still remnants of police tape and thing, you know, it's just, I mean, it's for the most part, it's cleaned up now, but it's just, the whole landscape is different now.
Yeah. Hmm. It's interesting because, I live in Nashville and my parents, they live in a town called Chattanooga, and just south of there, across the state line in Georgia, there was a bad tornado that basically went from somewhere like East Tennessee, like basically from Mississippi all the way into like the Appalachian Mountains. This thing cut a swath, and this was in 2011 that this happened, and several people were killed. And there's a ridge there, as you drive down one of the roads. It's been 7 years now, and you can still, the trees have started to grow back, but you can still see where the tornado cut the swath because of all the dead trees, yeah. Even now. And it's amazing just the power that those things have.
They sent logging trucks into the neighborhoods around here to clean up the trees. I mean, logging trucks taking 200-year-old pines out.
Yeah.
You know, it's just unimaginable. It, you know, like I said, people were going to help their neighbors with the chainsaws. There was people walking around the neighborhood with chainsaws trying to clean up yards and help people get it back into their houses. And I mean, there's a dog park near here that was hit really badly by the tornado. And there was one fellow who was walking his dog when the tornado hit, and he and the dog just basically hit the dirt and laid as flat down as they could while the tornado went overhead. And then they survived it. But he said it took them like 2 hours to find his way out of there because there was no reference points. It was just debris everywhere and he didn't know where he was. And like I went walking through the dog park today and you get lost at times because there's no reference points. Like,
that's freaky.
You know, it's just, it's like, where am I? And then you'll see a tree that you recognize. And I mean, when you see people that are in the woods walking through there, and I mean, it's been a while and there's still people just bursting into tears walking through the neighborhood. Yeah.
That's crazy.
What category were these? Do you know the category?
Oh, I'm trying to remember now. The really bad one that it didn't hit us. It went through sort of south of the city, then jumped across into Gatineau, Quebec. And I think that was the worst one. And I think it was a 3, I think it was the one that came through our neighborhood was only a 2.
Only.
Yeah.
we occasionally will get tornadoes through here. Most of them are pretty minor. We had one close enough to our yard back when I was a kid that my dad's truck was being like lifted up and dropped. Like it was in the field right next door. You could see it just like if it had come this way, it would have taken out the store, the house, whatever, but it didn't. It just dissipated.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I've seen like, you know, when they have tornado warnings here, I've seen lots of really small tornadoes in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they'll knock down trees. And I mean, you know, we had a windstorm in the spring that knocked over a few trees in the neighborhood. That's normal and expected. But I mean, this was not, you know, anything that
you've seen before.
Well, not that I've seen here before. I mean, I'm from the prairie, so.
Right. But I mean, up there.
Yeah, and I mean, I lived in Colorado for a while, and we certainly had tornadoes there, too.
Yeah, but it's just kind of a testament to how much the weather really is changing when you look at what's going on.
Yeah.
Where it's going to end up, who knows?
I don't know. Like I said, it's not unusual. I mean, like I live in an area that, you know, is get storms, just like we get earthquakes. Mm-hmm. People don't realize that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and
but major ones or minor ones?
We can get some pretty good earthquakes. We actually are in an area that gets small and frequent earthquakes. So we actually get them almost as often as some areas in California, which surprises a lot of people. And they say every 50 years or so, there can be a really bad one. And we've had them to the point where they've like damaged our house a little bit. So, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Because we have a fault line that runs through this area. It runs down through one of the lakes and then heads toward, it ends up in the Long Island Sound. And I think it comes from up there. You're pretty much straight north of me.
Yeah.
And it might be the same fault.
I'm trying to think now. I know there is one that was felt in Washington, D.C., the one that damaged the memorial, you know, I can't remember, the one that was in the Spider-Man movie. I'm sorry, my mind is going blank now as to, is it the Washington Memorial? The one that looks like a big tower?
Monument, yeah.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, it was the...
I was there last year and it was still closed.
Yeah.
From that little earthquake. Yeah,
yeah, my husband was actually in the Smithsonian when the earthquake hit there. And he said that he could see the Spirit of St. Louis moving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he thought oh, that's a new effect for there. And then he realized, but the earthquake that hit there, I could feel here. So,
wow.
Yeah.
I remember when I was like in fifth grade or something, one hit when I lived on Long Island. And we were in class and everything started shaking and everyone's joking that it's an earthquake, not realizing that we could actually get an earthquake.
Yeah.
It was very minor. It didn't do any damage, but everything, you know, shook.
Yeah. Yeah. My joke is that, you know, the one time the earthquake always hits is when I'm in the shower, I swear.
Charlene, does that have anything to do with the Laurentian? Is that in your area? Is that
the Laurentian? They're Laurentian what?
I don't know.
Okay.
Is it a name of a fault or?
I'm just like coming up with a
geographical
term for you.
Yeah. No. So well, there's.
I think that's.
Yeah, it can be used for a lot of things. It's a common name here. Ottawa, the Ottawa River, I think is basically where the fault line is. There's kind of a, usually faults kind of come in threes.
Laurentian Divide. That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay.
Yeah, that's close to you.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a, we're very close to a fault and we get lots of frequent small earthquakes, and we've experienced a couple really decent ones here, but I mean
nothing like what Red Pill has gone through.
No,
probably not.
No. No, although I know one of the issues here is that a lot of our downtown is built on landfill, which is really susceptible to earthquakes. Yeah, our national defense headquarters is on that. Which is not a good place for it. I think they're talking about finally moving it. Not so much for that, but just because it's an old building and it's hard to get in and out of it. And it just makes no sense to be where it is anymore. But.
Okay. So we started this with, what did you think of the Skinwalker Ranch documentary? Maybe your insight is such that the government decided to shut it down before you were able to say anything.
Oh, geez. I really wanted to like that documentary. I really did. I was so looking.
I think we all did, honestly.
I was so looking forward to it, and I was kind of disappointed.
Yeah.
Honestly, you know, my honest opinion is I found it a little disappointing. I enjoyed aspects of it. Although, you know, there were things I really liked. I actually think I enjoyed the footage from George Knapp's footage the best.
Mm. Yeah, that was, but that, I felt that way too.
Yeah.
Everybody felt that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the parts I enjoyed. I didn't enjoy a lot of the other stuff. Looked like the advertisements for the movie where they're promising you all these things. And then when you go to see the movie, you don't want to just see the promises again. You actually want to see what they're promising, and they don't fulfill those promises.
Yeah.
And that was what, and it was even, it started off with this, there's so much we could tell you, but we're not going to, sorry. It's not going to happen this time. It's like, well, I might as well just stop watching it now because no, you're not going to tell me, are you? Nope. Nope, we're not. But, you know, and it's like, well, then wait another 10 years and then tell me, you know, because yeah. I just don't have time for the we could tell you so much. We know so much and it informs everything we do and you'll just have to trust us on that. Yeah. It's like,
and
well,
it's changed the world as we know it. Okay, cool. What is it? Well, we can't tell you.
Yeah.
Isn't that frustrating?
Yeah.
That's just as frustrating as the government telling you that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was my feeling on it, is that don't start off telling me, or don't start off hinting that you're going to tell me something earth-shattering and then not deliver.
Yeah. But isn't that what most of these things do?
Yeah. And there was nothing new in that movie that you couldn't hear and actually hear better versions of in some of the interviews George Knapp gave about the movie when it came out. Yeah,
well, that's why we pushed everyone toward the Radio Mysterioso talk.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really good talk. And I enjoyed that more than I enjoyed the Skinwalker movie. And
yes.
Now, I would still say I'm glad I saw it, and there were things in it I liked. But all in all, I don't know, it was
a letdown.
Yeah, it was a big letdown.
what did you expect from the movie, honestly?
Something new, something that I hadn't heard before, some new footage. Yeah. Not just a bunch of guys sitting around. You know, the scene where they're around the fire is just, it's like, yeah, the old boys club has got together to sit around the fire with a rock star. I think that was what he was. I guess he's a pop singer.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a pop singer, not a rock star. I mean, the British, like, they're pop singers.
I think for me, when I put it on and I started watching it, was I was expecting, well, I'm going to get to see what this place looks like, and then also maybe I'll learn something new that I didn't know before. But having read the book, there really wasn't much new there.
No.
And you know, I haven't even read the book, and I didn't find anything new.
What was new was the admission that despite spending years researching this location and using all kinds of resources put on by Bigelow, what they got in return was oodles of high strangeness, but nothing which could make a case, you know, scientifically, nothing which they could actually write a paper describing or some kind of pattern or something, you know. That to me was the admission that kind of like every ufologist was waiting, is thinking that Bigelow was keeping a big secret, you know, like the secret of the universe that he managed to find. Like almost like a gateway to another dimension. But in the end, finally, it was this bucket of cold water saying no. He didn't get that, and also even to me the suspicion that he probably decided to get rid of the ranch because the high strangeness was affecting him personally. Like one of the things that I got from the documentary and from Knapp's interview with Radio Misterioso was this idea of the hitchhiker effect, how, you know, the people who visited the ranch, sometimes the high strangeness latched onto them and
right.
disrupted their lives in their own homes. And maybe that's something that happened to Bigelow himself. And in fact, Knapp in the documentary admitted as much.
And, you know, the fact that Bigelow was still pushing the E.T. idea told me they didn't have anything all that interesting from Skinwalker Ranch after all, you know? Like, every interview I saw with him was him still kind of pushing that there are aliens or extraterrestrials, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm thinking, with all the stuff you supposedly got at Skinwalker, you still think this is simply extraterrestrials?
Yep.
So...
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, that for me, I watched it and that scene with them around the fire, I just kept expecting them to pass around a big stick so that they could talk when they held it.
I'll make this point again. I think that I made it on my show when I had you on there, Soraya, is that they tried to make this place seem like it's more special than it actually is, that it's more unusual than it actually is, when there are several places around the world where the same kind of phenomenon happens.
Oh yeah.
And when I say that, it sounds like I'm kind of downgrading it or degrading it. It's and saying that it's not amazing that this happens, but it's just like, in other words, this isn't a unique thing. There's plenty of places in the world where this stuff happens, but I think they're really pushing Skinwalker Ranch because somebody has invested in it, as we've kind of discovered. Yeah. And they want to make it, I think, as Josh described it, like kind of like a paranormal theme park or a paranormal playground. I think that that's the eventual goal there with the new owners. So if they can hype it up as much as possible, do some kind of extended time media blitz, then that's what's going to happen. People are going to start paying money to go and have the experience of a lifetime, when they could probably go down the street to some weird place, Soraya's house.
Not so much my house, but there are definitely a couple odd areas
or
around
just
here.
Wherever, just wherever you are, Soraya, that would be like, you know, it follows but you,
there,
so.
There are some really weird areas, like there's that one Russian forest that all kinds of bizarre stuff has happened in.
Yeah.
And the difference between those places and like Skinwalker, I think, is the fact that a scientific team has actually looked at Skinwalker, whereas most of these places are kind of off limits to most people.
Right.
You know, or
well, that
you,
gives
or,
it, well,
or you
that
got
gives
people
it that air of genuineness of to it, because somebody has gone in and took the time to investigate it over a number of years.
I totally forgot what I was going to say. Never mind. There was something there and then it just went away.
Well, I made the point too that, you know, like it's very normal that, you know, the whole Bell Witch, you know, our little folklore around here, you know, mm-hmm. I made the point, you know, Adams, Tennessee, it's up the road from me. It has a very strange feeling to it, and strange things still happen there. So It's the place. So, there's places, you know, go somewhere around your hometown, you're going to find a weird place that people talk about, and the weird things happen.
But there are places where exceptionally weird stuff happens.
Very true.
Yeah.
You know, where you can pretty much, you know, count on something strange if you go there. Like I said, there's that one forest in Russia, and I forget the name of it. But the list of stuff and stories that people have walked out of there with is beyond bizarre.
Mm-hmm. I remember watching the documentary and finding correlations between what they were saying and things that I read in Whitley Strieber's and Jeffrey Kripal's book, The Supernatural. This idea that they were listening, sounds almost like it was some kind of like a railroad going underground
Yeah.
You know? And that was and sounded exactly like something that Whitley experienced in his cabin in upstate New York. You know, yep. It's like some kind of like almost like a metallic drill sound. And obviously, and also the fact that he found near his property, near his cabin, what was apparently an Indian burial site. And obviously, with the case of the Skinwalker Ranch, the Utes identify it as the trail of the Skinwalker, and also well, the probably were a place where the ancestors managed to come to cross from the underworld or the other world to this world.
Hmm. Okay. I don't know if I have anything else to add to that. Anyone else?
For what it's worth, I find that despite its many failures or disappointments, and I wasn't disappointed. To me, the Skinwalker Ranch was kind of like the Phantom Menace of UFO films documentaries. Some people were thinking that it was going to be the most awesome thing ever. I was going to, you know, blow the lid and show the reality of UFO paranormal phenomena, whereas I was lowering my expectations to the point that I actually managed to somewhat enjoy the film. And despite, like I said, these limitations, I also feel that if George Knapp had managed to make his documentary with his footage, it would have been more interesting, or at least more impactful, because Corbell made his documentary for the True Believers, whereas Knapp, as a journalist, was making a documentary for the everyday people. But that's nevertheless, I still feel there was an effort to try to document this, and it's no easy feat. You know, I mean, Skinwalker Ranch is the 200-pound gorilla of paranormal, of high strangeness. It's really, really difficult to wrap your hand around it, and it's really difficult to convey how important this is to outside people. That's what happened with Joe Rogan when he made his series for Sci-Fi. Joe Rogan questions everything, and one of the things he did when he had his episode about UFOs is he went to Skinwalker, and then obviously to him it didn't make any sense, and since then he's made all sorts of jokes about bulletproof wolves and how silly all that is, and that is probably how it will remain for most people until something else happens. I felt that maybe one step toward that was when because of To the Stars and because of the disclosure of this secret Pentagon program, Ati Pausa, that we learned that there was a connection with Skinwalker, that using the money or the funds from that program, Bigelow, you know, went and do further research with that ranch, and that people from, you know, the military, you know, even higher up in the command chain, who were very skeptical about it, went to the ranch, and they were scared to death by what happened to them. So who knows what will happen 5 years from now? Possibly Skinwalker will still be inside baseball for people who are interested in the paranormal, or maybe not.
Hmm. I think fair enough.
I think my feeling about it was it would have been nice if they had just talked about the ranch and left out some of the conspiracy innuendo and the stuff about, you know, the Nimitz video that they showed, and they didn't need that. They really should have just told the story of the ranch.
Yeah.
And focused on that, and because, I mean, there's a lot there that they were leaving, you know, that they had to leave out because they were going in these other directions, and about, you know, which government agencies have been here. And it's like, unless you're going to give us the details of those government agencies and tell us who they are, then don't mention them. don't even go there. That's just, you know, that's just a distraction. from the actual story. Just tell the story about the ranch. Show the ranch. Let people see what was in the book and really focus just on the ranch.
What I also would have liked to see is them actually interviewing the people that this stuff happened to, rather than interviewing people who heard the story of what happened to these people.
Yeah. Or the Shermans.
Yeah.
Well, no, just some of the researchers too. Like, the one who saw the portal or whatever, you didn't hear from them. You heard from people who heard the story from them. So you were hearing it secondhand.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, well, this was in the book. I would have liked to have heard it firsthand from the person who was actually there.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that they couldn't get permission.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Because, I know there was all these interesting stories that you only heard, second and third hand, and that were repeated over again in some cases when you'd already heard them.
I thought that was weird.
Yeah, when they could have gone on to a different story rather than repeating the same story from different second and third hand opinions.
So I did have I had asked for some AMA questions from people, and I do want to do a Patreon only show, but I figured I could throw a couple of these to you guys and get your responses on this show, and then the rest will go to Patreons. And one of them was, in the spirit of Halloween, and we're recording this October 20th, 2018, what significance do you think the witching hour, 3 a.m. to 3:30 a.m., holds when it comes to high strangeness and paranormal events? And have you had any strange experience with it yourself? Do you think that it's somehow tied to why we sleep and how little we still understand regarding the need for sleep scientifically?
Michael Persinger actually wrote a lot on that.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm trying to think. I could probably find the article. If you'd given that to me ahead of time, I could have found found his article on it. I'll send it to you so you can post it later. But he actually did. And in fact, when I went there to his lab, that was something he asked me is, do you have a tendency to wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning? And yeah, I do. And people who are prone to unusual experiences have that tendency. And he did have an explanation for it based on just the natural cycles of the earth. So,
but why would it affect people who are prone to weird experiences?
Because we're sensitive to our environments.
Hmm. Okay. Okay. Huh.
I don't know. I don't think that's. I don't buy that explanation. I've had weird experiences happen to me at 3:33 a.m.
Ah, yeah, me too.
That sometimes once I had a sleep paralysis episode, and it took me a while to try to regain control of my body. And one of the things that I noticed, the first thing I noticed, is that in my alarm clock was the hour was 3:33. And that's not the only occurrence in which I have had weird experiences with that number.
Hmm. Do you think some part of us knows what time it is and then uses that as it tries to communicate something to us?
It's possible that at some point that there's a part of you that is not that is always awake. People consider sleep as you completely shut down, as if you were a computer.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah, and exactly.
Well, if you go back, I remember reading about how historically that people actually would wake up in the middle of the night, get up, have a meal, go visit neighbors, talk, and then go back to sleep and sleep for another couple of hours.
Yeah.
And that it was considered normal to wake up at around 2 or 3.
Yeah, and apparently you get better rest that way.
Yeah.
Right. It's only what in the last probably 150 years since the beginning of industrialization that's really taken hold, that we're supposed to get this 8 hours or 9 or 10 hours of straight sleep. Yeah, before that's just not how it was. Like what Cheryl Lee said, that people had different types of sleep patterns at different points in time.
Yeah. Also, have read that there is this notion that as you grow older, you sleep less, right? But apparently, that's not the case at all. It's just that the older people sleep just as much as us. It's just that we younger people, there's all these moments between getting conscious and going back to sleep. That it's like a continuum, whereas older people are more aware of those lapses. So they feel that they are sleeping less, but no, yeah, they're sleeping as much as younger people. It's just that they remember that they wake up in the middle of the night.
We also take more naps.
True.
True.
Well, Soraya, everybody knows that it's because Christ died at 3 p.m., so 3 a.m. is the satanic inverse of that.
Yeah, which you know, yeah.
You should know that, Soraya.
I did not.
You're into metal and everything.
I vaguely remember hearing that somewhere. Is that actually something someone says?
That is actually something.
It's in the Bible, man.
Whether it's actually true or not, you know, that's a whole other thing. Yeah, I have actually heard that. That's like the reason why it happens at 3 a.m. is because that's the time of the devil.
Yeah.
I heard that on the Exorcist TV show before it got canceled.
These are things that come into popular culture. The Warrens and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, this is. I think that's a very like Catholic viewpoint.
Well, sure.
Yeah, the idea
that everything is demons.
The idea that the devil would try to mock the God will reverse his doings.
Right.
That's why the true satanic symbol is not like a pentagram or the face of a demon. But the satanic symbol is a cross upside down.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, there was someone post-Christ who was going to be crucified and insisted he be crucified upside down because he was not on the same level as Christ.
Yeah,
and that's where that came from.
Unworthy of dying the same way as the Son of God.
So that kind of suggests something different for that symbology.
True.
But how easy is that to do something like that and just say, well, we're just going to turn something upside down. That means that's bad. I mean, they do it with the pinnacle, right? You turn the pinnacle upside down. It's the devil's horns and all this kind of stuff. And it's like,
so that is based around the idea of what each point stands for. And it's supposed to be the four elements. And then the fifth element being spirit turned upwards is for, like spiritual upraising, you know, whereas turned downwards, it's materialism.
Yeah. Thank you, Anton LaVey.
So I had another sleep question here. So I think we can do this too, since it fits in nicely. Question was, what do you know of jet lag, or rather the symptoms thereof? They said, on my third night in Dongal, I had an incident of knowing, feeling this angry entity in the upper right-hand corner of my bedroom. I resolved that if I left and slept in the den, it would know it had power over me, so I thought to it, I'm going to be here indefinitely, so we best come to terms and get used to one another's company. On night three, in the midst of a dream wherein I had been fighting two token-looking skinhead biker types, complete with leather and denim jackets with the sleeves torn off. As I broke free of their grasp, I went flying through the air in an upward arch motion, spinning around from back to face down. I see my parents' street in South Philly rushing up toward me. I felt a very hard thud and yelled, "You mother effer!" My cursing out loud woke me, and I found that I had been thrown from the center of this king-size bed and hit the nightstand with enough force as to really bust open the bridge of my nose. Question, was this, as I put down at the time, jet lag wearing off on that third day, or was there an entity in the room for real, and the possible entity was the entity in my room real and pissed that I stood my ground? And to really hammer the possible entity theory home, the feeling of this presence grew very silent to the point of non-existence when a cat had decided to pay me a nightly visits, climbing through the opened window and curling up next to me as I slept. The cat was of an orange-brown hue with black stripes.
See, that's why you keep cats around. They ward off evil spirits. You don't get rid of the cats because everybody knows that they keep trolls away. If you've ever seen the movie Cat's Eye, you know what I'm talking about.
So I don't know what to make of that experience. You know, it's entirely possible if you're fighting in your dream that you could have been moving and thrown yourself off the bed. It doesn't mean there wasn't something else there with you. But I don't know if there's any easy way of determining from that information.
Well, when you experience jet lag, and I've never experienced it to an extreme degree, I would assume that you feel a little weaker than you normally are. So mm-hmm. if something is there to take advantage of that, then there's a possibility that that may happen. I could see that.
I mean, I put myself through jet lag on a fairly regular basis just because I don't have much of a sleep schedule. And it tends to suck because you just feel drained all the time. But I've never had necessarily weird stuff happen. Yeah. I've had weird stuff happen when I've stayed up too long, and not like hallucinating while I'm awake, but when I'm trying to go to sleep, my brain's going, wait, are you driving? I'd be like, okay, stop that, you know? Because I've been fighting to stay awake while driving and then gotten home and been like, I'm so tired. Now I can't sleep because every time I start falling asleep, my brain goes, you're not driving, are you?
I hope you didn't do that while we were driving back from Pennsylvania that time.
No, not at all. Not at all. I did do it coming back from Canada once.
Oh, well, that'll do it too.
Because I was up in Canada for like 2 days and I barely slept the entire time, and then I turned around and drove home. And I was so tired when I got home. I almost fell asleep driving about 20 minutes from my house. And I'm like, oh, yeah, wait till I almost get home to do that. Just for irony's sake.
No, I was going to say that, like, I mean, I've experienced really bad jet lag. And generally, I would say that it tends to lessen my tendency to have any kind of unusual experience, because I just... completely zone out. And I just, you know, I just sleep really deep sleep when I I really hurt, like my whole body hurts.
Like, really?
Oh yeah. I'm just miserable when I've had it. And yeah. It just feels like you just can't get enough sleep. So I don't know. But then if you're in a weakened state, who knows what, you know, like I don't think that any of us can answer as to what that person's experience was. We could say that perhaps having jet lag might have made them more prone to having an experience, or just, you know.
It just depends on the person.
Yeah.
Your own, I guess, I don't know, what is it, your neurology or your chemistry, or maybe it just depends on the person. Some people are going to have an experience in a weakened state, and some people might not. I mean, I think it just depends on that particular person.
Red pill, any thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, it kind of reminds me of that documentary that we discussed some years ago, The Nightmare.
The Nightmare.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it sounds like a hypnagogic state that the guy was in, and doesn't mean that, you know, that is Jeffrey Kripal makes a really interesting distinctions in the book that we were talking about earlier, The Supernatural, about between things that are imaginary and things that are imaginal. You know, he considers imagination to be something akin of a two-way mirror. You know, sometimes there are certain special occasions in which imagination is not only reflecting, you know, only, you know, the things from this side, manage to peer to what's happening on the other side, not completely, not faithfully, because it's still kind of like tainted by your expectations, tainted by your psychology, but nevertheless, it's kind of like an echo from another realm. So yeah. I don't know. I mean, it will be interesting to know if the guy has had similar experiences in the past.
Yeah, another thing that would be interesting to know is I know some people take what's it called, melatonin.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, but it's specifically marketed for people for jet lag. Like to help you get over jet lag more quickly.
Really?
Yes.
Oh yeah, because it regulates your cycle.
Yeah. So, and it can cause unusual dreams, like you know. So it could, you know. So that would be one thing. Did he take that to help deal with the jet lag? Because a lot of people do.
And I know Mike Hughes had that story about when he took way too much melatonin experimenting with it, and he had an experience that left a handprint, an entity, and he encountered an entity in sleep paralysis that left a handprint on his chest when he had woken up.
That's true.
Yeah. And I mean, I've heard from various people who've had, you know, really vivid experiences when taking that. And like I said, I do know that it is marketed specifically for jet lag.
Soraya, can I add something about the, what you're talking about with the 3 a.m. thing?
Yeah.
Just to add that the number 3 is very powerful. It's a very powerful symbol for some odd reason for humans. It seems to be like there's a 3 is like it's a number of completion almost. I mean, it's everywhere. So it could be that we're just wired. Maybe we are wired towards that number somehow.
Well, if you look at the Kabbalah, I mean, the concept of 3, you have the three top Sephiroth, I think it's the Supernals, that are like above the separation of our existence. So it's like you have the Godhead and then the male-female, and then everything else comes into existence below it. So the 3 fits in there too.
Yes, very good point.
So, and 3 is, you know, also, you know, the whole concept of procreation, male plus female equals 1 plus 2, you know, 1 plus 1 equals 3, because right. Now you have a child after, you know, the connection.
Right. I think it's almost it's just like a basic number for us.
Yeah. And a triangle.
Yeah, the triad. Okay. You know, Trevor making all sorts of connections with that. Also listening to 3 knocks, you know, on his cabin. And after that, you know, all sorts of weird stuff happening.
Yeah. So I wonder those are all basically human concepts of 3. So why would, well, I guess if you look at the Kabbalah, it may not be a human concept, but it's still a human translation of something. So I wonder why 3? 3 dimensions?
Well, in some philosophies, the idea is that 3 is kind of like a balance of between positive and negative things. You know,
yeah.
Then with the third force, you get some kind of like a resolution. And also, it's interesting, you know, Buckminster Fuller found that the triangle is structurally is the most stable figure that you can use, you know, for architecture and engineering. You know, basically all the things that he did, all his spherical structural spherical domes were based on using triangles.
Huh. Well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we got the pyramids, which are basically triangles.
Exactly.
All right. Well, anyone have anything else before we conclude this?
Nope.
Anyone else?
I think we're getting tired.
All right.
I'm going to stay until 3 o'clock in the morning and see what happens. I think we should go all the way till 3. Yeah. Yeah. I already watched Phantasm 3 yesterday, so I'm going to.
Go watch Phantasm 4 so it ends right around the witching hour.
Maybe one day we should do a recording at 3 a.m.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Not so much.
Wait, who's 3 a.m.?
Mine.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you all. This has been a good talk.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Where Did the Road Go would not be what it is without help from our Patreons. And a special shout out to those pledging $10 or more: Allison Cook, Super Inframan, Andy McNamara, Charles Beauregard, Craig Cisternos, Jose A., Scott Morris Everett, Robert Groom, Roland Belsted, Savannah Barlow, Riker and Stark, Russell Wilcoxon, Sasha Lord, Christopher Vaughn, Ben Crow, Carla Mahoney, John Eddy, Chris, Mark Brady, William Lovelace, Patricia Gayaquinta, Kevin Schreck, Alex Bowes, and Alfred Tuttle. Thank you all so much.
Come in. Come in. Do you read me? Do you understand the numbers pouring over your connection? Singing, soaking into our transmission. 21, 34, 55, 89, 144. Whence came this dream that bugs my mind? Behind a curtain, outside of time. Can you hear the ballet plays, the whirring of the world? Of the universe, ventricles and tetrahedra, chambers number 1597, and counting, and counting. Can you hear the ballet plays, the whirring of the world? Can you hear the ballet plays, the whirring of the world? Can you hear?
You have been listening to Where Did the Road Go? This show is made possible in part from our Patreons, and we thank you and everyone listening for helping us continue this exploration of the strange. You can always find everything Where Did the Road Go related at www.wheredidtheroadgo.com. And thank you so much for your support.